Good morning, everybody. This is Turning Towards Life. I am Lizzie and this is Justin. We are live here every Sunday. This is a Third Space coaching program, project, inspiration called Turning Towards Life. And each week we bring a different source that either Justin or I chooses. And this week we have the topic of fraudulence. So this is a source that I wrote last week in response to a conversation we were having in our Third Space space around what this feels like. And actually yesterday, there may be some people here watching this morning who were at the group with me and my sister Holly Holden and my mom Evie Pryor yesterday, and we had this amazing session on bringing all of the things that we are that feel shaming to us somehow, that feel like they're a part of us that we don't enjoy or we don't like. And I'm really feeling this theme really strongly in my life right now of how to be disclosive and how to be really honest and be in the honest conversation about just what's going on behind the scenes. And so this feels tricky for me to have written this and to put it out there and to risk what it is to be kind of public about this feeling of, what if I get found out one day for the disorganized, ashamed person that I am? And so I wanted to bring it in the spirit of transparency, which we've talked about a lot here, in the spirit of community, in the spirit of joining in our bits that feel like they're not the ones we want to necessarily show to the world. And so that's what we're doing. And when I writing this on my Sacred Rebellion page as well, there was a really great response to it and it seemed to resonate for a lot of people, which I'm really glad about. So that's our topic for the day, is fraudulence.
Well, morning Lizzie and morning everyone. I'm really pleased to be doing this morning, as I am, it's turned out, every week. And actually I'm speaking, taking part in this morning from a hotel in central London where we are running our professional coaching course. So we are on day four of the first session of a whole new year with a wonderful, engaged, alive, curious group. So it's one of the reasons why we're starting slightly early this morning. Before I dive in and read your source that you've written, Lizzie, so this is really present for me now. Of course, any time that we get up and teach something, bring something to the world, try and do anything other than just fit ourselves into some preconceived notion of who we should be, this is at play. I've been really watching this over the last 4 days whilst I've been teaching. And I love this, I'm really appreciating this move that you're naming, which is, can we get more transparent about what's going on with us? Because I don't just mean you and me, I mean all of us. Because as I have kept on finding, particularly reading this piece, the things that I'm most afraid that people will see about me are usually pretty similar to the things that most other people are afraid people will see about them. And we're all in this dance of holding ourselves away in case we get found out. And the beautiful thing is that getting found out often is the greatest joy to be found out and to find that other people are in it too. Mm-hmm. So that's the spirit in which I want to read this, is in the joy and possibility of that uncovering that can come. So here we go. Lizzie's piece on fraudulence. The feeling that I will be found out one day, that someone will come and lift the facade and see me for all my faults and inadequacy, that the powers that be will expose me, exile me, shame me, that finally and once and for all, I will be outed for all the things I don't know, all the ways I've been half-baked, all the ways I have made it look like everything's okay when I'm really like a duck on the water, looking like water does indeed run off a duck's back. And my little legs are going wild beneath the surface of the water, trying to stay afloat and keep this whole thing going. My little legs are going 10 to the dozen because I have to go this fast just to keep up. If I don't keep momentum, then I'll fall behind. If I don't paddle hard, I will be seen for what's really going on inside. If I let up, I will be cast out for my uselessness. If I stop and be real and admit it's hard, I will be outed as the shameful creature I really am. This duck, like any other duck, who feels incapable, ineffective, confused, sad, grief-filled, flawed, lacking in confidence, who is doing their best to be loved, to be good, to be successful, to be worthy, and to be noticed. If anyone could see the flapping, the freakouts, the procrastination, the laziness, the incompleteness, the disorganized, the shortcuts, the mistakes, the arguments, the lack of knowledge, just how much I'm winging it, I would surely be cast out. The worst of human shame, to be lost and exposed and raw, in the surety of being faced with my own brokenness, fully acknowledged by the world and the people who are powerful and important to me. And yet, in the sharing of my inadequacy, I gently find out that I am not alone. And it turns out that all these feelings, all this fear, is a universal thing. It's not actually mine. It's a general consequence of humanness. And we all had parents and cultures and education systems that used shame as their main source of power because they didn't have anything else at their fingertips when faced with a human in front of them. So each time we share, each time we open, and each time we join one another and undo the shame by seeing each other and accept the unacceptable, we heal. And we grow in confidence that we are good, we are worthy, we are loved. We are vulnerable, and that's how it should be. Unfinished, messy, lovable, doing the very best we can. And doing that alongside our fellow humans in connection, in warmth, in kindness. And together we journey, all flawed, all broken, all holding one another in the great web of life that is human community.
Oh my gosh, it's quite something having someone else read the inner situation. And because this one's a really tender one for probably anyone actually, and I get that it came through my fingers on my keyboard, but there's something about having it read by another person that's really, I think it's the same thing. It's reassuring that someone else could say it, not just me. So I'm going to read it now on fraudulence. The feeling that I will be found out one day, that someone will come and lift the facade and see me for all my faults and all my inadequacy, that the powers that be will expose me, exile me, shame me, that finally and once and for all, I will be outed for all the things I don't know, all the ways I've been half-baked, all the ways I've made it look like everything's okay when I'm really like a duck on the water, looking like water does indeed run off a duck's back, and my little legs are going wild beneath the surface of the water, trying to stay afloat and keep this whole thing going. My little legs are going 10 to the dozen because I have to go this fast just to keep up. If I don't keep momentum, then I will fall behind. If I don't paddle hard, I will be seen for what's really going on inside. If I let up, I will be cast out for my uselessness. If I stop and be real and admit that it's hard, I will be outed as the shameful creature that I really am. This duck, like any other duck, who feels incapable, ineffective, confused, sad, grief-filled, flawed, lacking in confidence, who is doing their best to be loved, to be good, to be successful, to be worthy and to be noticed. If anyone could see the flapping, the freakouts, the procrastination, the laziness, the incompleteness, the disorganized, the shortcuts, the mistakes, the arguments, the lack of knowledge, just how much I'm winging it, I would surely be cast out, the worst of human shame, to be lost and exposed and raw, in the surety of being faced with my own brokenness, fully acknowledged by the world and the people who are powerful and important to me. And yet, In the sharing of my inadequacy, I gently find out that I am not alone. And it turns out that all these feelings, all this fear, is a universal thing. It's not actually mine. It's a general consequence of humanness. And we all had parents and cultures and education systems that used shame as their main source of power because they didn't have anything else at their fingertips when faced with a human in front of them. So each time we share, each time we open, and each time we join one another and undo the shame by seeing each other and accept the unacceptable, we heal and we grow in confidence that we are good, we are worthy, we are loved. We are vulnerable, and that's how it should be. Unfinished, messy, lovable, doing the very best we can. And doing that alongside our fellow humans in connection, in warmth, in kindness. And together we journey, all flawed, all broken, all holding one another in the great web of life that is human community.
Someone who I really love once said to me, right in a moment when I was for the first time talking about a mistake, a big mistake I'd made, that I was feeling overwhelmingly ashamed about. And she said, shame is the path home. And this is one of the things, among many things that are so striking me from reading this and hearing you read it, is that the whole pattern of feeling a fraud, like I'm about to be found out, is actually kept going by all of our efforts to never feel ashamed. It's exactly what produces all of that activity. I mustn't do this, I mustn't up this, because then I'll feel ashamed and that's when I'll die, I think. It's often how it feels. And so the part that's coming out for me most strongly, Lizzie, is what happens when we find ourselves in relationship with other people who are willing not only to welcome our shame, but welcome their own shame. So the path to this kind of coming home, the relief into, oh, we're all really messy because that's just the way the world is, goes through that way. It doesn't go around it. It doesn't go, doesn't come so much by me saying to you, oh, it's fine, everything's fine. Everything's fine. That's also true, but it's missing the most important step, which is, and I'm filled with shame about all of this and fear about what you'll say and will I be accepted and all of those kind of things. And that's why it's so important that we find our way into and that we make relationships in which this is possible, because it only happens between us working with this. It doesn't happen on our own.
Yeah. Oh. And also, Justin, in our work, you know, this is one of my really big passions, which is that we create systems where this is possible. And it's not just individual relationships, it's actually atmospheres where this is what the atmosphere is, which is that we are genuinely all in it together. And to be, you know, even to be a teacher means to be explicit about our flaws, you know, and to not hold ourselves up as something other than really broken in particular ways like everybody else. And at the same time, we are holy, we are grace, we are divine beings. And to hold this place of, yes, we're all flawed, and yes, we're all whole, and the flawedness and the expression of it is part of our wholeness, and to dignify it and to welcome it all and to not have a kind of performance element to what we do or how we do it. It's like I'm in a phase in my life where I kind of can't do things if that's not there. And I think that's in part why I wrote this as well. I'm just realizing now. Is because I really want to be a stand for this. So in a way, the part where I said, in the sharing of my inadequacy, I gently find out that I'm not alone. In a way, I don't know that to be true, but I feel the possibility of it. And I didn't know whether people would just kind of quietly ignore this thing when I put it on the internet. And maybe people would think, oh shit, you know, Lizzie's a bit off the rails. We'll just ignore that post and then look, you know, that's possible. But what I realize is that that is true. And I had that in this workshop yesterday with my sister and my mum that they were running, that everyone got really joyful when everyone was disclosive about the stuff that they feel is parts of them that are the piece that you put away because you think, no, that's really unacceptable. I can't tell people that part of me. No, no. And when we bring that and we don't get cast out, there's this whole new appreciation for who we really are. Because if you don't run away when I say this thing, I get gifted with, oh, hold on a second. Well, if you're not running, maybe I'm not as abhorrent as I think. And maybe I then get to question whatever my self-beliefs are around whether I'm good enough or I'm acceptable to the world and myself. And I think that's the bit that I feel is like, if we don't have that, I'm not sure even what's real or how, what we're even doing. If we're all just kind of in a dance of pretending somehow, you know, on God knows how many levels. And I guess this can happen in marriages, with our families. But what if we really put down these ways that we're trying to perform and be good and just be really, really honest about stuff? What kind of relationships does that make? And what kind of world does that make? And what kind of systems does that make? So I can really feel the life in this for me.
Hmm. As I've been teaching these last few days, I keep on tripping over the bottom corner of the whiteboard. It sticks out just a little bit further than
the wheelie bits.
It's got a wheelie bit on the bottom. I'm tripping over it again and again. I haven't figured out a way of not tripping over it yet. But I can feel the part of me, so interesting. I can feel the part of me that wants to just be known for being someone who trips over stuff, which I do. It runs in my family. We trip over stuff. We knock things over. You know, our fingers are longer than we know. Our feet are, you know. But I can also feel the part of me that wants to, even when that happens, to make that part of the cover up. Like,
yes.
Oh, look at me. I can entertain with this. I can. It's been so interesting to see that, how I can recruit. It stops being honest and transparent at that point, and it can easily become part of the cover. It's been really, really interesting to watch that, because the truth of it is there is one way it's really funny. Every time I trip over, it's like, it's really funny, but there's another way in which it's a kind of, I suppose what I'm saying is I'm noticing this move when there are some things that when I'm in a sort of shame avoidance performance mode, I can cover up, you know, I can cover certain things up with other capacities that I have. But how interesting that when there's something I can't cover up, that part of me, the very tiny child part that really doesn't want to be ashamed, how quickly that then come in and go, use it. When really, you say this, I think, really, really important thing in here, among many important things, which is one of the reasons we're in this situation is because of how often shame is used when we or other people are in a position of power to have the stuff that we want happen, because it's so powerful to use that. I completely get why, when we're parents or we're teachers or we're bosses or we're whatever, how easy it is, maybe when we feel desperate and ashamed ourselves, we don't know what else to do, that we'll fall back on subtly or very explicitly using shame to get other people in line.
Yeah.
So I think I'm saying all of this because I can see as we're speaking what a self-sealing system this is that we feel ashamed, we use shame to manage to manipulate the world and other people so that things go that way. And then because of that, we're all hypersensitive to not being shamed, so that that won't happen to us, and it keeps the whole thing in. And that's exactly why this point that you're making about we have to make places, relationships, where we can just simply say, here I am. Here's what I'm even afraid of telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm feeling, the sort of what's happening for me right now as I'm saying it. We have to create that. Which is why, like you said, in the work that we're doing, the kind of community, building community that we're trying to do in our work, but also I think in the kind of coaching that we've got really dedicated to, I actually think it has to be more than one-to-one. Like you said, it really needs to take part in systems, in constellations of people. But really dedicating ourselves, one of the reasons it's hard to be this for each other is that to be this way for each other, we have to be willing to be this way ourselves first. And we can't do that without others. So it's actually properly a virtuous cycle when we step into it, but it's also very, very quickly the opposite, constricting cycle when we stop paying attention to it.
Absolutely. And Justin, you know, the thing you're saying about tripping over and making that kind of a thing to use or something, I think I experience doing something similar, which is that I find myself, when I do look at the shameful parts, that I really believe them. So like, you know, if I say that I'm disorganized and I try and see myself in that, and I try and look at myself as innocent in response to feeling like, oh gosh, I'm all over the place or something, I can feel myself much more attached to the identity of being a disorganized person than the identity of being an innocent person. Like I can see my innocence and I can see my goodness, but I notice my habitual attachment to the identity of a disorganized person feels much more comfortable to me. Like I'm way more able to say that to myself than I am to say to myself, I'm innocent. And I'm good. But there's a kind of a groove in my inner narrative that this process is really showing for me at the moment, where I'm attached to the pieces of self-talk, of self-belief that are the defunct parts. And I notice that being in the and, as my sister Holly calls it, where you really work with the divinity that's present at the same time as the distortion, and you bring them right close to one another and in the same moment, I can see that it's more cringeful for me to talk of my innocence than it is to talk of my shame. And I can do the same thing as well. I can make it funny, and I love making it funny too, because it actually is quite de-shaming to just be in a comedy sketch with myself about myself. But I think I've just become a dedication to experiencing and feeling and seeing my own holiness in the same moment, or at least days, as my pieces of me that I feel are in some way not okay or not acceptable or not functional in the way that they should be. And so it's really eye-opening to me to really, really experience the resistance to my seeing of myself as holy.
Yeah, to be able to say, I'm innocent and disorganized. I'm thoughtful and thoughtless. I'm both selfless and selfish. I'm messy and ordered.
Yeah.
All of that. And that's what... There's a lovely, I've never read the book, but there's a book I love, which is embracing the sacred messiness of life. And that, yeah, I think it's part of the cover story. Also, our attempts where we go, I'm not messy, I'm not disorganized, I'm not all of this. And we try and say to ourselves, I'm good, it's a sort of trying to boost self-esteem move. But what it does is it leaves us out of contact with other things that are absolutely true about us and unavoidable. It's the woven into the fabric of things that will be all of those other things too. And then it's an equal, I think, defensive move when we go, well, I'm just so messy and disorganized, and I, because the brackets in that is, oh, and I have to improve myself. I have to be part of a project of self-improvement and get my performance back on track.
Yeah.
So both point in the same direction, as long as we do one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then to be able to say, truthfully, I'm all of this. I contain and I am all of this. That is the... I think it's one of the reasons why it's hard for so many of us to reveal ourselves to one another in the way that you talk about in this, is because we imagine we're also stuck in this polarity, and we imagine that if I start talking about myself, what will become apparent is only I'm messy, I'm disorganized, I'm selfish, I'm stupid, I'm... That's what's going to be revealed to the world. But what we forget is that what's always revealed as we reveal ourselves is all of it.
Yeah.
Which is really the move here. It's so interesting to find ourselves, for me, in this territory, in this move, that it's the way of working with shame is ultimately is to know our wholeness, which includes our shame and our delight, which are often intermingled. Yeah. And it includes all of our competence and our incompetence, and all of our successes and all of our mistakes, and all of our strengths and all of our frailties. It's so life-giving when we're able to do it. And the tragedy is there are so, for most of us, there are still so few places in the world where we get to do this. I guess that's what we're trying to turn around here.
Yeah, exactly. And as you were talking, Justin, I was just thinking as well, like to cultivate, so for me personally, to cultivate my own holiness, or at least my own contact with my own holiness and my own belief in it and experiencing of it, is the thing that has me feel okay about sharing and being transparent about the parts of me that feel outside of that. So to be a dedication to self-appreciation and self-seeing and self-dignifying and having a practice where we actually welcome in and encounter our divinity and our wholeness feels like it's the thing that, well, if that's there, if I can genuinely rest in that, there's not so much at stake anymore if I tell you I'm disorganized and I've really messed up on something. Yeah. It's not life or death anymore, because that's not where I'm placing my faith. My faith is in something that's grander in the scheme of my humanness, that's more important to me, really, which is who I really am, the bigger I am. And if I'm in that question of identity deeply enough, the doors get open to all of the other stuff that feels like it needs to be released, needs to be brought to the light. And I really feel like there's part of that's my practice and my dedication, but part of that comes from the relationships that I hold as well, to be people who inevitably see me more clearly than I do, because that's just kind of what I've realized is to be human, is that we can't see ourselves like other people do, and maybe we get glimpses, but mostly on the whole we are pretty bad at that. You know, we're pretty bad at appreciating ourselves and seeing our gifts. And it really helps to have people who do that with us, for us, in community with us, so that we're not the only ones trying to hold on to our goodness, but other people are naturally just doing that because of the nature of relationship and being human.
This is really important for each of us in terms of our own suffering. Here's my last thing to say for today. It's really important for the leadership and healing of our world. So much of what's going on in the world, so much of the way people are using power, is either coming from the I'm so perfect and let me tell you what to do, or it's coming from the I'm wallowing in shame and awfulness and I'm going to do the things I do because it's intolerable to be here. And I know, because I see it around me, what happens when you stand in both and we know our own holiness and we know the holiness and dignity of others, what we can say and do from there, it's radically different to either of these. And in a way, what we're in the world at the moment simultaneously is this polarization. But also, I think the really good news is that there are lots of people who care about this.
Yeah.
Which is what gives me hope as well.
Mm-hmm. This is really lovely, Justin, to be in this conversation and to feel it, something being born on this. It feels like a big non-negotiable for me. It's a really big articulation of a big non-negotiable.
Well, thank you for writing this brilliantly and bravely and beautifully and bringing it to us. So I have to go. I'm going and leading the professional coaching course for the rest of the day, and
yes,
I'm late. So I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next Sunday. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you, everybody. See you next Sunday.